If you're a regular listener of this show, you may have heard a story I told a couple of weeks ago about a school in the Boston, Massachusetts area that had to recall a test because of a problem with one of their questions. One of the questions on that test, or they don't call them tests or exams anymore, as we found out, they're now called assessments. One of the problems they had on that test was a little short essay, they don't call them that either, constructed response question, in which the students were asked to describe what would be a fun day, what would you do for fun on a snow day? What would you do for fun on a snow day? The question had to be recalled because it was deemed socially insensitive because there hadn't been a lot of snow at that point, and there might be kids from the area who had never seen snow. This may seem ridiculous to you and to me, but it is the sort of thing that happens in schools all over this country. And Diane Ravitch has looked at this problem and written about it in a new book called The Language Police, How Pressure Groups Restrict What Students Learn. And I'm going to tell you right now, no matter where you fall on the ideological spectrum, what Diane and I are going to talk about is going to make you angry. Hello, Diane.
How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine.
The example you gave from Massachusetts is a perfect example of the language police at work. There is a new regime of censorship and educational testing, and the textbooks that are used in the schools. And the mistake that they made in Massachusetts was that the bias reviewers should have caught that ahead of time and said to themselves, what about children who've never seen snow? They can't possibly imagine snow. In my experience, and I've worked at the federal level on a panel appointed by, I was appointed by President Clinton, these kinds of questions get knocked out all the time. If you have a test question that involves the ocean, the bias reviewers will say, well, you can't include that test question because what about kids who don't live near the ocean?
Now, isn't it possible that the kids might have seen a movie or a TV show or read a book that would have introduced them to the concept of the ocean or the snow? And
well,
isn't it possible that in school they might have learned about the ocean or the snow?
Paul, I grew up in Houston, Texas, and I never saw snow until I went away to college. But I knew what snow was, and it wasn't because of having wealthy parents. You don't have to have wealthy parents to look at TV or to read a book.
That's right.
I mean, every child who, by the time they're in fourth grade, has an idea of what snow is. And you can't say, I mean, what I did for my book, for this language police, is that I contacted every publisher of educational materials, both test and textbooks, and asked them to send me a copy of what they call their bias guidelines. And it turns out that there is a massive regime of censorship of educational materials, and they're censored before they ever get to the classroom. I compiled a list of over 500 ordinary words that can't be used on text and that you'll rarely see in a textbook.
Yeah, let's go through some of these, and then we'll talk about who's doing this and who's responsible for it, et cetera. Why can't you say the word jungle anymore?
Well, apparently that word is offensive to somebody. I mean, I always have trouble explaining the logic behind this, but jungle has been banned by some education publishers. Founding Fathers has been banned by many, if not all, educational publishers. That's a sexist term.
You can't say Founding Fathers anymore?
No.
What do you have to say now?
Founders.
The Founders.
You can also say the Framers, but you can't say Founding Fathers, because that would imply that that there were only men writing the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and we don't want to imply that.
Wait a second. Isn't that a fact, though, that only men...
Of course it's a fact. But what's that got to do with anything? I mean, I have seen test passages knocked out for being biased, even though they were factually true. One of the test passages that I saw knocked out was one about how in the 19th century, before there were commercially available quilts, women and daughters used to sew quilts together, and they created, in many cases, beautiful works of art. And these quilts were made for the daughter's dowry. And the bias and sensitivity reviewer said, this is a sexist story. It shows women in a soft and submissive role. Hey, that's what they did. It was true. It was historically accurate. But no, that question can't be used.
So historical accuracy can't come into play anymore?
That is not a defense against this bias and sensitivity review. The other thing that's startling is that when these standardized tests are put together, the people who do the putting together have a long list of topics that cannot be touched upon because they will be offensive either to someone on the right some religious conservative who will object to, let's say, fossils or evolution or fantasy, or someone on the left, or a feminist or a multiculturalist or a representative for this group or that group. So everybody who wants to cut words out and cut topics out, they win.
Yeah, I was shocked to find out that, you know, my daughter, I thought she was getting a regular education, and they taught her about dinosaurs in school. But there are some schools where they cannot do that because there are people who think, well, that gets into the evolution question. Let's not even go there.
Well, this is true. And there are today in most states and probably in every state in this country, the standardized test industry has abolished any reference to dinosaur because dinosaur implies evolution, and that will get the people who don't believe in evolution upset.
Now, Diane, who controls this? Who is it who is actually making these changes? Is it the textbook publishers? Is it a certain ideological group, or is it everybody at every side of every spectrum?
Well, this is what happened, and it's the story of my book, which is that back in the late 60s, early 70s, the textbook publishers began to be hit by a lot of complaints from feminists. And they said, if you don't take out any word that refers to men or man or, you know, salesman, businessman, what founding fathers, then we will have a demonstration at the next textbook hearing. And so the publishers began making up their own guidelines. And they said, well, you know, we don't want controversy. So as soon as they got into this position of we don't want controversy, everybody began going after them. The religious right went after them. People who said we're the spokespeople for the elderly went after them. You're not allowed to use a word like senior citizen. That's considered demeaning to the elderly. There are a long list of words that you're not supposed to use because they're supposedly condescending or demeaning to the elderly. Then handicap groups got into the action. And basically, it's the textbook publisher saying, you know, if we have a controversy, we will not have our textbook adopted by the state of California or the state of Texas, and we will lose millions of dollars. And so they stand ready to be, in effect, held hostage by every one of these groups, whether they're right, left, or something else.
And it's because California and Texas are so populous and probably buy so many books.
Right. I mean, between those two states, they have one out of every five children enrolled in public school in the country.
And so the publishers have no choice but to cave because they want to sell these books.
Well, that's right. And it's a government procurement process that we have in the textbook arena now. The same thing holds true in testing. The test makers don't want to have any controversy, and so as soon as someone writes to complain about a word or a topic, they take it out, and you'll never see a word like yacht. I mean, yacht is considered an elitist word, and no one should ever use that word. That is out of all of the tests.
Y-A-C-H-T, yacht.
Yes, that is a banned word. I mean, the list that are of banned words is, as I said, over 500 words, and I have barely begun to scratch the surface because I was only able to get maybe 15 of these bias guidelines from publishers. They're all over the place. Every state education department has its own bias review. But this is not bias. You know, these are not, in the way that we used to understand bias. I mean, we used to think, well, bias meant calling people bad names and using ethnic slurs. That's not what this is about. This is about everyday words that would appear in the newspaper, like landlord, landlady. Both of those are banned.
Why?
Because you're supposed to say owner. Because you're supposed to take any gender reference out of the language.
Now,
cowboy, forget it. Cowgirl, no way.
Yeah,
replace it with cowhand.
You have one in here, lumberjack. You can't call somebody a lumberjack anymore.
Oh, no, it's a woodcutter.
They're woodcutters now.
Isn't that silly?
Now, I do have to ask you this. Is there any validity to any of this? Should we be at least, maybe not this hypersensitive, but should we have some sensitivity to these issues?
You know, my view, having looked at this closely and thought a lot about it, is that every state education department and every publisher should make public what list of words and topics they will not touch. And let the public see it, because the public right now has no idea that this stuff is going on, and it's going on everywhere. But make it public. And if it looks ridiculous, people will laugh at them. And I think that laughter in this case is going to be the thing that makes this come back to some kind of a common sense position.
Yep.
I mean, clearly, I would hate to see brand names used in textbooks because there would be product placement all over the textbook industry.
But they're doing that now.
No. Brand names are a no-no. No logos, no brand names. Not in textbooks and not on standardized tests.
Oh, really?
That's only one of the things that are banned. But there are many, many things that are banned where you would just gasp and say, I can't believe that. You know, like, you're not supposed to mention owls.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. The little hoot owl in the tree.
The owl?
You can't?
Owl.
Why?
The owl is taboo to certain Native American tribes, and therefore the owl will never appear again as part of a story on a standardized test because it's offensive to some small group of people.
You know, I just want to mention some other things here that you say are no longer allowed on tests. And when I said people will be mad at this, you can't write about Mount Rushmore on a standardized test. Why?
Because in my experience, there was a story about Mount Rushmore. This was on a federal test, and the bias and sensitivity reviewers unanimously rejected any reference to Mount Rushmore and said that it was built on land that was sacred to the Lakota Indians of South Dakota, and that it should never again be mentioned.
And even if you're going to give that test to somebody in a place where there are no Lakota Sioux, you still can't mention Mount Rushmore.
There might be one Lakota Sioux somewhere who might see it. And, you know, the theory behind all of this is that whatever children read is somehow going to be about them. And so if a child reads a test passage that has reference to mice and they're afraid of mice, then they'll become so completely frightened that they won't be able to finish the test.
So
there is no research evidence that this is true, but this is what all test makers believe today.
So you can't teach Stuart Little in school?
It might be frightening. Well, you can teach Stuart Little in a book, but you will never see it on a test because it's frightening on a test to encounter a mouse, which presumably would include Mickey Mouse. But, you know, hey, that's Walt Disney.
You cannot, on Diane's list here, you cannot use the word snowman. You have to call it a snow person.
Right.
You cannot use the word slave. You may not know this. We never had slaves in America.
Apparently, we had enslaved persons.
We had enslaved persons.
Now, do you want to know the reason for that? It's kind of silly, but I'll tell you anyway.
They're all silly.
I know they're all silly, but the reason for enslaved person is because it's to let everybody know that a slave was taken into slavery by somebody else, and so they were enslaved. But what's crazy about this is no one volunteers to be a slave. The very definition of a slave is that you were taken against your will into a condition you don't want to be in.
Yes.
So, like, there's no real difference between being a slave and an enslaved person. But this is, if you look at the history textbooks, you'll find that either they use the two terms interchangeably or they replace slave with enslaved person.
You know, if there's something on a test about the Israelis and the Arabs or our recent war in Iraq, you'll be surprised, ladies and gentlemen, those did not take place in the Middle East. There is no such place as the Middle East on these tests, is there, Diane?
Well, the publishers are at least some of them, not every one of them, but they are mostly adopting the use of Southwest Asia. They're saying that the term Middle East is a Eurocentric term. Just as it's, some of the test makers, like ETS, which is the major creator of college admissions tests, has banned the use of the word cult, dogma, extremist, fanatic.
Craftsmanship is out of there because it has man in it.
What I love about craftsmanship is that it's one of the few words for which there is no replacement. It's just out. And, you know, you can when you think about that wonderful song that we sing about and crown thy good with brotherhood,
mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to say brotherhood anymore. You're supposed to say, I guess, and crown thy good with community.
Ugh.
Except that you can't sing God Bless America because you can't say God, you can't say bless, and you're not supposed to say America either.
Whoa, hold on a second. What do you mean you can't say America?
Because America refers to everyone who should refer, according to the publishers. It should refer to everyone who lives in North America, South America, and Central America. So if you say God bless America, you're saying God bless everyone in Mexico, Canada, Bolivia, Brazil, which is it's a nice sentiment, but you're just not supposed to use that word to refer to people who live in the United States.
Who are these bias reviewers, Diane?
Well, you know, every publishing company has a bias and sensitivity review committee. Most state education departments have their own bias and sensitivity. These are all people who've been trained in sensitivity. They're very, very sensitive. And where things went a little, I think, crazy, although you're not supposed to use the word crazy or insane.
Oh, I was going to say, what are you, mentally ill? But you can't even use that anymore.
You look up crazy and you'll see you're supposed to say a person with a mental disability. But this is a mentally disabled thing that was done, and it was done many years ago. When the whole idea began, it was a perfectly sensible and reasonable idea. Make sure there is no racial bias, either implicit or explicit, in the children's materials. Make sure there's no gender bias, where the boys do all the active things and the girls are bystanders just watching.
Right.
So when they got rid of all of that stuff, which they did, they're continued to be bias reviewers, so they had to find new and more exquisite forms of bias. So they discovered stereotyping. So a stereotype would be, for example, an African-American who's a great athlete. We don't want to have stories about African-Americans who are great athletes and great entertainers. That's a stereotype. Right?
You, in fact, have one in there. There's a story about a young African-American girl who is an athlete and her friend who's really good at math.
Mm-hmm.
And that was called stereotyping because one of them's an athlete. Never mind that the other one's good at math.
And also because the one who is an athlete is not good at math, and we must never show an African-American child who is not good at math, because that would make other children think, even though one of the girls was really good, they were both black children, one was good at math and the other wasn't, but you can't tell that story because, you know, for the stereotype reasons.
And you know what? It is one thing if all the stories only had characters like that who fit the stereotype. But if you write a story about Hispanics and write about the great accomplishments of some of the great Hispanics in history, and you also talk about the fact that some Hispanics are migrant workers, that last part about the migrant workers will be struck, won't it?
Oh, well, yes. It probably will cause the whole story to be struck because that's considered a stereotype. I mean, so much of what's called stereotyping is actually just reality. For example, I live in New York City. As it happens, about 90% of the produce markets in New York City are owned by Korean-American families. But to show that would be considered a stereotype. Therefore, that can never appear. Similarly, you're not supposed to show that an Asian-American student is an excellent student because that's a stereotype.
Has this affected other things besides, you know, the history? As we said before, historical accuracy is no defense against these sort of things to these people. But has it bled into math and science and that sort of stuff?
Well, I have been told by people, like there's a website called the Textbook League where they look very closely at math and science books, and they say, yes, you now get a lot of political activism mixed in with the math and science problems. But I personally looked just at the history and the literature books, and I found those books to be alarming because kids are no longer learning the great tradition of literature. You know, it would be a multicultural tradition. They're getting a lot of completely unknown writers whose work is being presented as if it were great, simply because these are writings that meet the bias guidelines.
Yeah, well, it also fits in with the concept of banning books, and you know, you can't read Huck Finn, you can't read Harry Potter. I'm sure there are schools that are editing Shakespeare because there's something offensive in them.
Well, Shakespeare has, over the years, been probably the most heavily edited and revised of all writers, because a lot of people who don't like kids to read about, let's say, Romeo and Juliet, they're afraid that they're going to be sexually aroused by reading Romeo and Juliet. They take out hundreds of lines from that play. Now, I would say that given the salaciousness of the popular culture, we should make sure that they know that there are sexy lines in Romeo and Juliet as a way of inducing them to read it.
Yeah, that's
a good idea.
It's
really tame compared to what you can see on network television today.
And the kids can't read books or be asked questions about any child who's disobedient.
Right. That's considered offensive to the religious right because there have been parents who have gotten stories taken out of school books, out of textbooks, because they said, if my child reads about a disobedient child, she too will become disobedient. Now, this goes to this idea that's been very popular in education over the last generation, that everyone's a role model. Everything you read is a role model, which is absurd because you can't even read Lady, you know, Macbeth, because you'll think all women are murderers.
Well, you know what? When I was a kid and I read The Community, I immediately wanted to join the Navy and turn on my commanding officer. So there's something going there.
Uh-huh.
Now, how can this be fixed? I've got 1 minute left here. Can we come up with a solution in 1 minute?
Well, the most important thing to do is to insist that the people who do this make it public. Put it on a website. Let us all see it. And let us laugh at it if it's ridiculous, because ridicule is the most powerful tool that the public has.
Yes.
So tell the Missouri State Department of Education, if you're doing bias and sensitivity review, and I promise you they are, let us see the guidelines. Let us know what words you censor, what topics you avoid on the test. And put it out there where the public can see it and ridicule it out of existence if it deserves to be ridiculed.
And is it happening, by the way, since you say that California and Texas, because they have so many kids who need textbooks, does that mean that my kid is using one of the textbooks that was edited for their purposes?
That's exactly right.
So there's
the textbooks that were written to meet approval in California and Texas are the textbooks that you have to choose from, because there are really only four big conglomerates that own about 75% of the publishing industry today.
Well, I'm going to turn your book into a textbook. All of my listeners should get this and read this, because if you were horrified by what you heard here today, you'll be even more horrified when you go into more detail, as Diane has done, in The Language Police, how pressure groups restrict what students learn. It's unbelievable. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great day.
Diane Ravitch here on The Paul Harris Show. This is the Big 550 KTRS.